All right, big day in City Hall. Obviously, fallout from Jussie Smollett's recharging by the special prosecutor assigned in the Cook County State's Attorney's Office. Also breaking ground on a brand new Chicago development, Chicago neighborhood, essentially. And fallout as the mayor is not happy with her police leaders after what was a violent weekend in Chicago. Amazing to see the stat. The most violent Chicago weekend in 18 years. Heather Sharon is the managing editor for The Daily Line. You can find it at thedailyline.net and also subscribe to their newsletter. She joins us on Wednesdays, and she joins me now. Heather, let's start with Jussie Smollett. This is obviously a story that is not great for the incumbent, the state's attorney, but what has been the fallout around town? Are other leaders talking about this?
Sure. The mayor was asked this morning what she thought, and she basically said, look, he was indicted once, he's been indicted again, we're going to try it again, and we'll go from there. However, she wouldn't talk about the political fallout for State Attorney Kim Fox, whom she has endorsed, even though they've had a bit of a rocky relationship over bond reform and gun violence. So she didn't try to pour any gasoline on the fire now surrounding this story, which seems like it's never going to end, and we're going to be covering this, 50 years from now.
There's obviously, I was thinking about this today because there's so much that's being talked about from the political fallout and whether or not this will affect the primary. And you hear Kim Fox's campaign say that we've been Comeyed. Talking about James Comey and the investigation before the 2016 election. When you look at this and you think about covering politics the way you have, how often do sort of embarrassing stories get, or I wouldn't even say embarrassing, things that get brought up right before an election happen, like they have in this case?
You know, it's not unusual, which is a really interesting thing when you think about that. Early voting starts February 19th. So who knows what's going to happen between February 19th and Election Day on March 17th. So that has got to be, I think, weighing on voters' minds as they start to decide whether they're going to vote early and who they're going to vote for. But it's not unusual. I think that this was sort of the last possible moment for Dan Webb, the special prosecutor, to make this move, because there's sort of an unwritten rule that you don't take these sort of legal actions within 30 days of an election. And that, I think, is what Kim Fox was talking about when she talked about being Comey, because, of course, he announced that the investigation into Hillary Clinton's email server had been reopened just a handful of days before the 2016 right. presidential election. However, she backed off those remarks a little bit today, saying that, you know, she was sure everything was on the up and up and there wasn't actually any sort of skullduggery or malfeasance going on. But she can't be pleased that Jussie Smollett is back in the headlines after she had won a series of high-profile endorsements, including the Chicago Sun-Times, which backed her campaign this week.
Now, Mark Conklin and Patch today, he said that, the people who own the Sun-Times are throwing money at Kim Fox, and that the endorsement in the Sun-Times is kind of a conflict. You know, people have talked about that since the paper is owned by a lot of different labor unions and leaders and people like that. Is that getting any play? The idea that obviously the Sun-Times endorsed Kim Fox, but they do have some conflicts that weren't necessarily divulged?
Well, this was an endorsement made by the editorial board, and that editorial board is full of people and journalists that I respect to the utmost. And I know that they responded to Mark Conkle today on Twitter saying, you know, we evaluated this case on the merit and we didn't have any thought or, you know, concern about what our owners would like. But, you know, I think it is a question that gets asked a lot about newspapers that do make an endorsement. And I think that was the reason why you saw the Sun-Times publish an article today, how we make endorsements, and sort of to pull the curtain back a little bit on that. I think that the journalists, the Sun-Times, who sit on the editorial board, they want to inform the public just as I do, and they can't control who owns
right.
the paper.
Right.
And I think it's somewhat unfair to say, you know, these journalists votes are bought and paid for when you have no actual proof other than the fact that unions supported Kim Fox, which they did before Jussie Smollett and they did after. So that allegation is one that cuts a little bit close to journalists, especially since you're questioning their integrity. Mm-hmm.
Oh, getting fired up. I like it. Heather Sharone, Daily Line. This story is one, like you said, that just keeps coming back, and we keep having to talk about it. And I'm sure politicians don't want to talk about it as well. When it's all said and done, this obviously people are going to be paying close attention to how this kind of plays out in the courts. Will people be satisfied? You know, you've covered courts and you've covered these kind of cases before. Or is this the kind of thing that we're never really going to know what happened because they're going to protect all the information and they'll settle out of court and we're just never going to know?
Well, this is a criminal case, so there's very little chance of it settling out of court. There could certainly be a plea agreement, but I don't think you're going to see the kind of plea agreement that Jussie Smollett initially entered into, which was basically like, you did a couple hours of community service and we took your $10,000 bond and we're going to, you know, just call it even. I think if there is a plea agreement, it's going to include much more punishment for him, potentially, if he is found guilty, just simply because, you know, there was such an outcry to the original culmination of this case. And let's not forget that Jussie Smollett is still at this moment suing the city, and the city is suing him because they tried to get back the $100,000 right, or so that it cost the city to investigate that. So I would imagine that those civil cases would be put on hold while this, you know, criminal case moves forward. But it is, you know, it does sort of make it seem like time is a flat circle, that last February Jussie Smollett was indicted and appearing at the Cook County Criminal Courts building, and this February he has been indicted and will be appearing at the right, criminal courts building. What's old is new again.
It's Jussie Smollett season two, is what it is.
It is. Yes.
All right, Heather, let's move on from Jussie. Let's talk about something else. Let's talk about the story that came out this weekend, that this weekend is one of the most violent February weekends in Chicago history. 18, I think it's the most violent in 18 years. And this has got the attention of the mayor, who seemed to dress down police officials or police leaders. She's dissatisfied with what happened this weekend.
Yes. The return of Accountability Tuesday was back this week. And this was famously when she would call then Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson and his top officials to City Hall to say, you know, what happened this weekend? What can we do different? And I think what is upsetting the mayor beyond just human cost of violence is that this is not typical for a cold, wet, somewhat snowy winter weekend. And it is somewhat concerning, considering that if things are this violent and that the weather is this terrible, there's a clear uptick when the weather gets nicer and when it gets really hot in the summer. So the mayor knows that she's got to address this because, you know, the voters are going to judge her on this. She promised to get a handle on Chicago's violence problem by treating it as a public health issue as opposed to sort of a law enforcement issue. And the results, as of yet, have certainly been mixed.
Yeah. I wonder what it all means, only because we just, you know, the restructuring, the interim superintendent's restructuring. There's talk tonight of a short list, but I wonder if another weekend like this happens in February and you start to have a string of these, if it'll change the way that the mayor has been approaching changing the way we police the streets of Chicago.
I would. She has shown herself somebody who's willing to try new things and is not particularly attached to any one way of doing things. But this is a moment of great transition and change for the police department. And I wouldn't be surprised if there aren't people internally trying to figure out to what extent is our internal process contributing to this violence and what can we do to sort of correct what's going on internally so we can address the violence that's out there. But if you talk to police officials, they will tell you that there is only so much they can do to prevent violence. Right. And it's not clear to me whether these shootings are somehow connected or there's some like sort of a larger issue going on. And a lot of times there have been when we've seen bursts of violence like this. So it's an incredibly difficult thing to get a hold of once it sort of steps off. And at the same time, there's been quite a surge of crimes and violent crimes with that on the CTA train lines and bus lines, and that's also been at the top of the mayor's to-do list.
Yeah, right. Heather Sharone from the Daily Line joining us as she does every Wednesday. We'll take a quick break, come back, and let's talk about the Lens on Lightfoot series you guys have been doing. You've been partnering with other organizations to take on issues. And there is a big movement to reinvest and invest in the south and west sides of Chicago using an old Rahm Emanuel tactic from a neighborhood opportunity fund. We'll talk about that coming up here on 720 WGN right after break. Stay with us. 217 says, who in their right mind would offer Smollett a plea bargain for someone who faked a hate crime? Yes, I'd have a problem with that. A felony is a felony, whether it's 16 or 6. And Mary says, you know who I love? I love Heather. She's solid. She's informative. She's articulate. I'm so glad she's a regular guest. There you go.
I can't confirm Mary is not my mom.
That's right. Heather Sharone, managing editor over at the Daily Line, joins us on Wednesdays to talk about all things Chicago, Cook County, and Springfield when it comes to politics. The Neighborhood Opportunity Fund. So you guys do this Lens on Lightfoot, and you talked about it on the program before, where you and other groups in Chicago get together to talk about some of the things that the mayor wanted to do and set out to do and whether she's achieved it since Election Day. The Neighborhood Opportunity Fund. What is this, Heather?
So back in 2016, Rahm Emanuel was facing a lot of criticism for presiding over boom downtown, but with not really anything happening on the south and the west side. So what he did was he said, okay, developers, if you want to build skyscrapers and tall office towers downtown, we will let you, but for that additional height and density, you're going to have to pay us an additional fee. And the developers said, great, we are happy to do so. And by the time he left office, there was a $57 million fund that was earmarked to make grants to South and West Side entrepreneurs and businesses to help them get off the ground. So the problem was is that under Rahm Emanuel, they had a lot of the program had a lot of red tape, and it was really difficult for businesses, if once they got the grant, to sort of get that money in their bank account and put that money to work. So Mayor Lightfoot, when she took office and found that big pot of money, I'm sure she was thrilled, and she has changed the rules for the program in an effort to make that money flow more easily from City Hall to these businesses. And the application process is going on now. Businesses have until February 29th to apply, and they should know by the end of March. And there's going to be another round of applications open in the summer, in July. And the mayor is hoping that this money can be used to help businesses, to help entrepreneurs, and it will have really, she hopes, a catalytic effect, because if you can offer people jobs, if you've got places for teens to go, if you have economic activity, there's less likely to be crime and violence and other things you don't want in the neighborhood. But this was really something started by Rahm Emanuel that he never really got off the ground. Mayor Lightfoot called it a smoke and mirrors program under her predecessor. So now she's got an opportunity to take this money and really try to make it work. And this is sort of, you know, what she campaigned on. So that's the whole point of the Lens on Lightfoot program, is to hold her accountable for those problems, for those promises, and to see what problems there are and to see what she's accomplished.
She's tweaking it a little bit. She's changing a little bit about how much the grants are, how much the grants will cover, things of that nature. And is City Hall in on that? Is the City Hall like the idea of using the Neighborhood Opportunity Fund differently under Lightfoot?
They do. So the aldermen sort of, they cleared a key city panel this week. It goes to the full city council next week, and it's anticipated to sail through with flying colors, because the changes will make it possible for businesses to get up to $250,000 as a grant. Right now, under the current rules, it's a reimbursement program. So let's say you are going to spend, you want to spend $50,000 to improve your storefront. You've got to have that money up front, and then the city will pay you back once it's done. And that's really hard for small entrepreneurs, especially on the south and the west side, where there aren't really banks or lenders clamoring to hand out money to people who might not have a great credit history or to have sort of a track record of successful business ventures. And she's hoping that by making it more of a true grant program, that will help this money sort of really be put to its highest and best use. They're also going to work more closely with these entrepreneurs and help them figure out how to navigate all of this sort of requirements, how to get capital, how to make sure that they hire reputable contractors, that sort of thing, so these projects stay on track and don't end up sort of falling through the cracks, right, like several of them did in previous years.
Now, the only question I have, and it's philosophical, really, is just, you know, as I live in the West Loop, and there's a lot of neighborhood, you know, the West Loop is a very vast neighborhood. It's not one that,
yes,
is just Randolph Street or just where the houses are and things like that. But the mayor essentially let developers have their way in the West Loop and the South Loop and places like that, where there used to be zoning ordinances that were in place, and they said they just busted through it. And this is the way they did it. I don't know. There's a certain point to say, I think that's all great, and I think it's awesome that they're making developers pay a tax. But at the end of the day, like 40-story, 50-story, there's a new one that's 60 stories on the other side of the expressway. They're talking about really dense development without much planning.
Well, I think they would probably argue we haven't stopped doing planning and we're not approving projects willy-nilly. But there's no doubt that these projects are taller and denser than they otherwise would be if not for this requirement. And that comes with a trade-off, right? There, you probably can't find a parking spot to save your life at peak moments. And it's really changed the West Loop. I was over there for the first time in a while, and it's like this whole new part of the city that didn't exist when I was in college and high school. And that comes with a cost, because it's also adding to displacement. It's also adding to gentrification.
To infrastructure. They're going to have to build all those roads up. Right.
That's right. And it is certainly contributing to a bit of the affordable housing crisis, because if you've got, you know, developers that are paying a premium to build these apartments, they are not going to be open to renting them for below market rates. And that means that those buildings are going to push people out, and it's really going to attract wealthier and many times whiter Chicago residents. And that has really a cascading effect on the whole city.
Yeah, it's interesting. I like the idea. I mean, it sounds like the former mayor is like, it's going to happen, so let's just put a tax on gentrification.
Right.
I would think that the newer mayor would think about maybe a different approach, but it doesn't seem to be the case. We're out of time. Heather Sharon, awesome as always. Check out the Lens on Lightfoot piece about the Neighborhood Opportunity Fund. And, of course, she joins us on Wednesdays here on 720 WGN. Heather, thanks for joining us.
Happy to be here.